Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
So, Chris Gibson, the last time we spoke, you were talking about the alarming number of suicides, not only among active military personnel, but among veterans. And you left us talking a little bit about Medicaid and the alarming numbers of people who are trying to get help but can't. And obviously, you as a congressman are being called on to help out with that, which is a historic fact that the mentally ill and get the shaft before almost anybody else, because as the old saying goes, the mentally ill don't always vote and they don't have alumni associations. And that's a sad truth. But we also have sequestration now going on. And as you try to get more, I take it this is not an easy time to get more resources.
Well, and look, about a year ago, I have been advocating for the bipartisan framework, the bipartisan budget, Cooper-LaTourette. This was inspired by the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission. We did not incorporate all the recommendations. I don't agree with all the recommendations in the Simpson-Bowles report. This was about 75% the same. For example, we did not include the Social Security recommendations that came from Simpson-Bowles, nor did we include the gas tax. But still, at the end of 10 years, this would have saved close to $4 trillion, I think about $3.8 trillion, such that the deficit would have actually been smaller than the interest payments on the debt, even as we grow the economy through pro-growth tax reform.
I'm sorry, Chris. Will you remind us what the major recommendations that could have saved $4 trillion would have been?
And this is going to be related to sequester, because let me just say this for the listeners, that had we enacted that budget, we wouldn't even have had a fiscal cliff, much less a sequester, because this would have been the long-term pro-growth, fiscally responsible agreement that would have set the stage for our tax code and for our spending going forward. So Cooper-LaTourette, first of all, comprehensive pro-growth tax reform. You look at the tax code now, it is unfair. It's unfair to places like us. I think it's bad for the whole country, but certainly upstate New York, this code favors corporations and those who have the ability to get retained lawyers to go find these loopholes. Just to give you a sense of this, last year, we spent $3.5 trillion, the federal government. We took in $2.5 trillion. We left out there, depending on which study you look at, between $1.2 and $1.3 trillion in expenditures, otherwise known as loopholes. Now, that's actually more than we spent in all the departments.
So give us an example of some of the worst of the loopholes as you see them.
Well, some of them have been, bandied about in the media. We give tax money, tax breaks for corporate jets. There are loopholes for oil companies. These are examples of subsidies that certainly are no longer necessary. You look at the oil companies. I mean, this is an area of our economy. They're doing very well. They don't need taxpayer subsidies to continue.
But now, don't you have colleagues in the Republican Party who insist that they be continued?
There may be some, but I can tell you that there's a majority that believe that they should not. Let me give you an example of how politicized this is, though. I was elected in November of 2010, and I was sworn in January of 2011. That month, the Democratic Party came out and they were attacking Republicans for supporting tax breaks for the oil companies. And of course, just a common sense guy, I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, you guys had control of the Congress just two weeks ago. And now you're coming after us. You did nothing on that. And then, for two of those 4 years, they had a filibuster proof Congress. That means the majority in the House and a filibuster proof in the Senate. And they did nothing to end the tax breaks for the oil companies. So let's just agree on this, that there's a emerging bipartisan consensus that taxpayer dollars should no longer go to oil companies, and we should fix that in the tax code.
Are you optimistic?
I am that we will get tax reform. It's been given pride of place now in the House. H.R. 1 has been set aside for tax reform. This is certainly going to be an iterative process. The House will have a version. The Senate will have a version. We'll have to reconcile it. But here's what the endeavor will do.
I'm sorry, Chris, I just got a little confused. You said pride of place. That means in the pecking order.
Yeah. H.R. 1, okay. Which is, usually what a Congress, regardless of which party controls the Congress, they'll set aside H.R. 1 for a major priority. H.R. 1, even though it has not yet been submitted, is a tax reform bill that's going to be forthcoming. What the endeavor will do is to go through the tax code, that 1.2 to 1.3 trillion in loopholes, close those that are not helping grow the economy. And in my view, with Cooper-LaTourette, we also protected the middle class deductions. We explicitly did that in language and two-page language in the budget.
So the mortgage.
The mortgage interest deduction, the state taxes, state and local taxes that go with it, charity, health care deductions, those are protected. And then we go through the rest of the code, closing loopholes that are not helping grow the economy.
So there's really $4 trillion worth of loopholes?
No, 1.2 to 1.3 trillion every year.
Right, of course.
Of which the Joint Committee on Taxation estimates that about $150 billion of that goes to the mortgage home interest deduction in the state and local taxes. So sometimes you'll hear people say, well, you know, if you close the loopholes, you're going to be hurting the home interest deduction. That's not true. That's not true at all. And in fact, I've seen in political conversations, I've seen this move all over the map. I saw the president in August 2011. He said, well, you know, we can get revenues by closing loopholes and lowering rates. And I agree with that. But then at the end of last year, he flipped and said just the opposite. He said, well, we can't get those revenues. We need to raise rates. It's like that was actually counter to the rationale he was giving in August of 11. Let me just tell you where I stand on this. I think we can go through the code. We can eliminate those loopholes. We can lower rates. We can grow this economy. We can get revenues. That's part of Cooper-LaTourette. Then we also do structural changes. So you heard in the State of the Union address, you heard the president say when it came to Medicare, he said he supported the Simpson-Bowles recommendations on Medicare. I think those are reasonable. And that's an accountable care approach. That is competitive bidding for prescription drugs. It's other efforts to fight fraud, waste, and abuse. That's anywhere from $450 to $500 billion over 10 years in reforms to Medicare that can strengthen the program going forward. So that's an example of some structural changes. There are some others in Cooper-LaTourette. We end the subsidies to corporate farms. Right now, our tax dollars are going to corporations that are producing our food. I'm not talking about here in New York, because largely in New York and in the Northeast, we have family farms. Not to say that our families aren't, in some cases, in many cases, LLCs, but they're still family farms. I want to contrast that with corporate big farms that are out in the Midwest and the West. Those farms are getting our taxpayer dollars, in some cases, to do nothing. Just to not grow, and we just have to stop that. In the Farm Bill legislation we did last year, we actually ended that and did an insurance program instead. But of course, as you know, that was not enacted. We are still pursuing that and look to, by 30 September, complete that Farm Bill. There'll be savings there. And then finally, spending reductions in the departments as well. So, but the Cooper-LaTourette budget doesn't do it with the meat cleaver that you see at sequestration. We do it over 10 years, and it's in a thoughtful manner, not as drastic as the sequestration. So look, I've always said that the sequester was meant to be a forcing function to get the two parties to come together to do what everyone knows we must do, which is to begin to get our country back on track in a pro-growth, fiscally responsible manner so that all Americans have the opportunity to enjoy the American dream.
Congressman Chris Gibson, always wonderful to talk to you. This is a very interesting subject, this business about the budget and what we're going to do with it. And so when we come back the next time, I want to pay a little bit of attention to our armed forces and to the defense function.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.